When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You know I love starting with questions, you guys, but how many times do you order takeout during the weekend? Because I'm really bad. I'm easily four times per weekend. I mean, I got so used to it during the pandemic. Who among us didn't have food delivered during the pandemic? And if you say you didn't, you're lying. I work in Manhattan, but I live in New Jersey. I do not have time to cook dinner. So at the height of the lockdown, when I was doing my show from my basement and the kids were stuck at home doing classes online, I was constantly calling. Okay, these are my local restaurants. Blue Moon, Greek to Me, River Tie, and yes, the Chipotle in Fort Lee. I hope, though, that you all tipped your local food delivery peeps really well. They worked so hard, right? They worked their tails off to keep us all fed back then. Among the busiest had to be DoorDash, right? The nation's largest food delivery company. They have been so successful, in part because they hired a guy named Christopher Payne to be the president. Christopher had something very important on the very end of his resume. Growing up in Kentucky, he flipped burgers at McDonald's. He's here with me today to take us through his journey from the bottom of the fast food chain to the very top today. Christopher, welcome to Everyone Talks to Liz.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And thank you for that introduction. That's fabulous.
Of course. I would have died without DoorDash during the lockdown. That's all I have to say.
Well, I am thrilled that hopefully we're on the other side of that. That was a trying time for restaurants, time for all of us. And so it's nice to be hopefully on the other side of it.
What were those early months like inside DoorDash? I mean, take us back to March of 2020 and open the window for our listeners to how you guys dealt with this sudden spike in demand for DoorDash services and all of the drama that everybody at home was dealing with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was chaos. I mean, honestly, it seemed that things were changing on a daily basis. It's easy to forget now, but at the very beginning in March of 2020, it wasn't clear whether restaurants were going to stay open. And it also wasn't clear whether Dashers were going to be safe delivering food.
Right.
And so it's funny, prior to March of 2020, one of our core strategies to make delivery delightful was to optimize the connect between the Dasher and the consumer, the handoff, if you will, right? To make that a pleasant experience. And then overnight, it was like, oh my God, like we don't want them to come anywhere near each other. We need to develop a contactless delivery system that works everywhere. And so it was just, it was an amazing time in the sense of like, it was such like the company coming together, the company finding ways to work with our partners. One gentleman sourced, a million things of hand sanitizers and protective gear for Dashers. It was an everyday, all day for weeks and weeks. And it was constant changing. And at the end of the day, I was very grateful for the company's ability to deal with that. And we were very fortunate to be able to continue operations throughout the entirety of the pandemic.
Oh, I don't know about where you are in San Francisco, but in New York City, and I live just across the Hudson, so I can jump in the water and swim to, the Upper West Side. Every night at 7 p.m., people would open their windows and bang on pots and pans to thank the first responders who were working so hard. And then I would say after the first responders who were just heroes to me. I mean, my dad was a surgeon. He wasn't alive during the pandemic, but I mean, to them, my hats are off forever. But also to the people who toil to deliver food to the rest of us. I mean, it's almost very much like they were on the front line.
and to the restaurant workers that that made the food. And you know, we all have to be grateful.
You made food. I mean, you flipped burgers when you were growing up in, is it Owensboro, Kentucky? Tell me about your childhood and how you ended up at McDonald's.
Yeah, no, Owensboro is where I grew up. It's a small town on the banks of the Ohio River in western Kentucky. My first job, I turned 16. McDonald's was opening a new store in Owensboro, and I signed up. I loved it, actually. I mowed lawns and stuff like that, but it was my first real job. And I just thought it was an amazingly well-run company. Like I did everything. I started with drive-through. I did counter. Then I did. I cooked the burgers. I could cook 48 hamburgers at a time. And I ended up becoming a trainer there.
At what age?
At 16, 17. Yeah,
you were
17,
training people. It's nice.
Yeah. No. And so. It was full circle, right? Now McDonald's is obviously one of the top partners for DoorDash. And it was fun when I got to connect with the McDonald's team to tell them about my origin story as a fellow McDonald's employee.
Well, as you say, full circle. But to me, a kid who goes at 16 and 17 and toils after school or on the weekends, each time that you got a couple of dollars of a raise, what was that like? And what did you learn from that experience about serving people?
Yeah, I love the customer aspect of it. Actually, I think it was a great first job because you literally got to interact with customers, talk to customers. And that was a big part about training the new employees about, you know, this is a customer service job, and your job is to interact with the customers and make it have a delightful experience. And so that was the aspect of the job that I had in hindsight didn't recognize that. I mean, frankly, that's an enormous skill for everything that I have done subsequently.
Yeah. See, okay, this is what I want our listeners to understand, that it's not, I'm just flipping burgers at McDonald's. It's glean, squeeze everything you can from it, because that experience will help you at every stage in the future. And then your future takes you to Dartmouth University, Ivy League. Very nice. Tell me about that. What was that experience like coming from Kentucky to the glass-jawed, lovey people from the East Coast?
That's funny. It was definitely a stranger in a strange land. I at the time, I probably to you still have a Southern accent to some degree, but
yeah, I heard it
back then. Boy, did I have a Kentucky accent. In fact, I don't think anybody called me anything other than Kentucky at Dartmouth for the first 6 months that I was there. But I absolutely adored my time at Dartmouth. I studied U.S. history, computer science, definitely started my path towards like being a jack of lots of trades. I studied philosophy, religion, arts. To me, it was a time to test new things, and it just absolutely was thrilled to be able to go there. And you know, a little nervous, to be honest. I mean, just to be frank, you know, going from Owensboro to Dartmouth, I was like, my gosh, you know, a lot of these kids were, you know, the governor of New Jersey's son was in my hallway. Would I show up and the folks had gone to these private schools in Exeter and Andover and others. And so you're a little nervous, but, in hindsight, Owensboro and the education system there prepared me well, as did my parents. And so it was a wonderful time
for
me.
Well, it's a little bit of a culture shock because I'm Californian, and my parents said, oh, you have to get a taste of Eastern education. They were sort of googly-eyed about it. So they sent me to summer school at Andover, Phillips Academy. Everybody there would say things like, oh, yes, my great-great-great-grandfather was Paul Revere. And my great-great-grandfather signed the Declaration of Independence. What did your grandfather do? I said, he was stuck on a boat coming from Russia, fleeing the Cossacks of Russia, you know, and he had a pillowcase with some of his possessions in it. Not very chic.
Totally.
Listen, that spirit that you bring from Kentucky and all of the rest of people who are listening, it doesn't even matter where you came from. It's what you bring to an organization, and I guess quite an organization you got hired by right out of college, Microsoft.
Totally got lucky, I'll be honest with you. I mean, I'd love to tell you I was like this, you know, foresight, and I saw Microsoft and what it was going to become. I started there in the summer of 1990, literally like a few weeks earlier, they had just shipped Windows 3.0, which became the product that propelled Microsoft to great heights in personal computing in the 90s. But the truth is, I actually just was trying to go work in Washington State. My brother was stationed out there. Oh my God. And Microsoft was the only company at interviewing at Dartmouth from Washington State. So I don't think I've ever told that story before. So that my brother takes full credit for why I ended up at Microsoft.
What was the job? I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, my first job was I was a seminar presenter. So I traveled around the United States. I would fly into a city on a Monday. Some equipment would arrive. I would set it up in a room, a hotel, and then 300 people would show up on Tuesday. I would do a seminar on Windows and Windows applications, what eventually became Office. I'd pack it all up, get a U-Haul, drive to the next city, do it again. Drive to the next city, do two, and then I'd fly home. And, you know, boy, was it unbelievable. Like, it was basically, I did hundreds and hundreds of selling seminars to hundreds of people at a time for 2 years. And it, in retrospect, was like the biggest gift for my entire career. It's a little bit along the same lines you were talking about at McDonald's, because I now got to converse with small business owners that were trying to grow their business and be more productive, and how to talk with them and listen and sell them on Microsoft's, you know, emerging technology suite. It was a gift, because, you know, that type of presentation right. is something that is core skill to being a business leader.
But Christopher, you said something that I just caught where you said, in retrospect. So I think it's important for people to understand that while it's happening, it's hard, it's lonely, it's scary, it's monotonous sometimes. My first on-air market was Columbus, Ohio. I had never lived in the Midwest. I was freezing. I didn't know a single person. I had never been a reporter before. I had to hit the ground running. And my mom used to say, darling, you cried for a year. But It's not easy, is it?
No, it's not. And I do think it helps the, like, I've always had an optimistic point of view. So it's like, you know, when you're in that, you know, I remember several weeks, it's lonely, right? This was very much a lonely job. I'd have people come, I'd do the 3 hours, and it talk about exhausting. And then people would come in and go, you know, where's the crew coming to pick up the equipment? And you know, and I'm like, oh, they're here already. You know, they're mm-hmm. here, because it was just me.
They are here, me.
Exactly. They are definitely here. Right. And, you know, getting to go to every state in the United States except New Mexico doing this, you know, Lewiston, Idaho, Lewiston, Maine, you name it, Portland, Maine. I literally traversed the country, frankly, alone. But then you get to connect with people. But it is tiring. It is hard. Sometimes, frankly, it's hard to keep yourself motivated, because at some point you're really good at these things. Mm-hmm. And then you're kind of like, oh, like, how do I keep this interesting?
Yeah.
How do I keep learning in this environment? And one of the tactics I found was just to really begin to experiment with asking questions, bringing the audience into the interaction. Ah. That transformed me, because actually the boredom ended up kind of motivating me to like get, you know, okay, I got to make this interesting for not just me, but for the people in the room. Mm-hmm. And so you're right. It's not easy. I think mindset is really, really important, and turning these things into opportunities, always be learning that's been my, if there's one core thing I've tried to do my entire career, it is learn.
Has to be, because then you die if you don't. You know, you're not going to win if you stop learning. This is Everyone Talks to Liz, and we'll be right back. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Klayman. Just go to Indeed.com/Klayman right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Klayman. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You did two tours at Microsoft. You've worked at some really big places, Amazon, et cetera. But I want our listeners to know about how you then started a company called Positronic, because herein lies the glory and then the failure.
Totally.
Sorry,
totally.
I didn't mean to be that blunt.
Hey, well, no, I think that's an important thing. My wife and I have this conversation. It's like, I think if you can't label things failure, you're not doing yourself justice. If you can't say, what did I do? What could I have done differently to have a different outcome here, and label that as a failure, not achieving what you hoped it would, I think you're doing yourself a disservice, because you can, it's this fault, it was this Great Recession's fault, these types of things. But the truth is, you can always do things better and differently. And so Positronic was my, I'd done search at Microsoft. I'd led web search at Microsoft for 4 years in the early 2000s. I just had turned 40 at that point, and I wanted to become a founder. And so Dane Glasgow and I, Dane's now at Facebook, we founded Positronic. And the basic idea was to use search technologies in different fields. We were actually using search to crawl the web to try to predict stock movement, essentially looking at things like Twitter and other sources to see if you could, as the web graph was forming, if you could basically predict positive and negative movements in stock. Now, this was 2007.
We had early for machine learning.
And if anyone, we were doing neural networks, and this is all related to the search technology we had worked on at Microsoft. And you know, if anyone knows the history, 2007, early 2008, the Great Recession began to happen, and so this was just it was a disaster. Like I full on participated in a bank run.
Explain what that is for people, because they don't know what a run on the bank is.
Yeah, I got a real clear picture of it. So I had raised $1.2 million, a convertible note from friends and family. I would never do that again, by the way. This is one of the mistakes that I made.
Okay.
Immense pressure to perform.
Yes.
Immense, right? And then all of a sudden, I put all that money in Washington Mutual, and you know, the news, exactly. So Lehman Brothers, and now the next to fall is going to be Washington Mutual. So I'm literally in line with like 50 other people on Fourth Avenue in downtown Seattle in a bank run, people like begging for their money and trying to, and what I'm trying to do is transfer the money into different banks to try to get FDIC insurance on that money.
Right.
And you know, I mean, you talk about, like, I knew there was a lot of risk going into creating Positronic. I did not know that a bank run and a financial crisis was going to be the thing that potentially, you know, did us in. Thankfully, JP Morgan Chase bought Washington Mutual, and that did not become the catastrophe. But the macro environment was such that, like, we needed to raise money at that point. And, you know, I could raise money, but the price tag on that was so great that I essentially would have been working for the VCs. And that was not something that I wanted to do. And so eBay came calling during that period of time, and John Donahoe had just taken over as the CEO of eBay and wanted somebody to come in and run his search technology. And Dane and I had run that at Microsoft.
Oh, nice.
And so that was a what we would call today an acqui-hire, right? And it was a good outcome, but it was not what I want. You know, it was not. I'm very appreciative. I enjoyed my eBay chapter immensely, and it was great, and it was way better than most of the other outcomes that were likely during this period of time. But it was not what I had hoped, and that was a stressful 18 months.
Let's put it that way. Nonetheless, a learning moment.
100% I feel like, you know, I guess now I feel like I don't get flustered much anymore. You know,
if you after
go
that,
a few of those, like, you know, exactly. And, you know, go through a pandemic and go through, you start to realize that, like, hey, you know, okay, with, you know, this isn't what I wanted, but I've got the skills to try to deal with this. And the reality is you learn from these experiences and you can take that forward.
Can I also ask about your time at Tinder? You worked at Tinder, right?
Yeah. I worked at Tinder for like 30 seconds. Yeah. So not
as long as it takes to swipe.
Exactly. Swipe. I should have swiped left and I swiped right. So I was the CEO of Tinder for 6 months and it did not work out, to say the least. So failure, yes, epic.
Important.
And, you know, so for me, I think the diagnostic was like, I didn't fit there I didn't fit with them. They didn't fit with me. And, you know, in retrospect, during the recruiting process, I think I spent a lot of time focusing on the opportunity, what they were doing. I thought it's very compelling in the sense that, like, I knew that it was viewed as a hookup app, but I also thought that it could become much more than that,
right,
to help people find what they were looking for. But I didn't fit with the company, and so I'm actually grateful in hindsight that it didn't, like, persist for much longer, because I would have been miserable. And so 6 months out of there, it actually led me, like, literally 3 months later, to get a phone call from this guy named Tony Hsu, who is the CEO of DoorDash. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I don't know. And so I take the phone call from him, and I'm the first person Tony interviewed to be the COO of the company. And by this point, you know, I'd gone through this, like, torturous process, and I felt bad. And I was like, you know what, why don't you go meet 50 more people? And if you're still interested in talking with me, come back. And we kept talking during that period of time. I even went so far, this is me applying my learnings, I brought my wife into the conversation, because she's amazing with people, and she's a PR executive. And I was like, is Tony for real? Is he what he seems to be? And she came out of dinner with Tony and was just like, he's the real deal.
Nice.
And sure enough. And so it led me to, now I'm approaching 7 years here at DoorDash, and super grateful. So I would say this to your listeners, like, if you want to be a generalist, you want to have these jobs and whatnot, you'll need to take risks along the way, mm-hmm. and you'll need to be comfortable that some of these things will not work out. And that they kind of hurt sometimes, right? And it's not this linear path from A to B to C. It's sometimes you go sideways, and sometimes you learn new skills, and sometimes it didn't work out. And always be learning and be comfortable enough to take that risk. And hopefully it will lead you to great chapters like I've had at DoorDash. But you know, there's going to be some Tinders thrown in there along the way.
Oh, that is the perfect way of describing it. Yes, sometimes you go sideways, or you roll over, or you go backwards. And I remembered being, well, we don't call it fired in broadcasting. We call it non-renewal of contract. But it happened to me. And then I remembered the great Linda Ellerbe, who years ago was a big, big anchor at NBC News. And she'd say, don't trust anybody in this business who hasn't been fired at least twice. So there you are, right?
Fantastic.
Yeah, fantastic.
You've just taught me something. I can call, instead of saying I got fired at Tinder, I can say it was
non-renewal
of contract.
Yes, everybody should take that ball and absolutely run with it. It sounds so much better. What a great story. Christopher,
awesome.
As we finish up, what do you want to leave our listeners with? Because I think it's important to note that through these important failures and stumbles, that can be hugely stressful. And I find sometimes my throat is filled with my heart. I get so anxious and stressed because we all are living very busy lives. And I think it's important to hear from you how you have learned to mitigate that stress.
Yeah, you know, look, I also want to be clear with your listeners and with you that, like, certainly not perfect at this. Like, right. I think I wear things on my sleeve. You know, I take the weight of the things that I do very seriously. And that is both a strength and a challenge because then you end up in a financial crisis and you're worried about losing money from all your friends and family. And you're like, holy cow, like, why did I put myself into the situation? Right. And so I think the thing I would say is that, you know, first of all, you need to be, you become aware that, like, this is stressful. And I think a lot of people focus on the stress of the individual situation that they're in. Oh, I'm going to work like crazy for these 3 weeks to deal with the pandemic and those types of things. The truth is, I've uncovered over time, for me anyways, it's the cumulative effect of the stress that hurts me the most, right? It's not any one like situation. And so I very much try to take care of myself, my energy, time, family's super important to me. I have always carved out time for that. Like, I am home at 5, I'm with the family. Like, there's no substitute for that because that's the source of my inspiration and my energy. And you just have to make that, like, for me, that I have to make a priority. I get energy from being outside. I very much like to walk and contemplative time. I do that. It recharges me. Sometimes I'll literally, you know, and so I think figuring out what de-stresses you / sort of makes you whole / what gives you work-life balance, it is the number one tactic that I have. I could have said things like, oh, let it roll off your back and these types of things, but the truth is I can't do that. If something goes wrong at DoorDash, you know, and it's a problem, I'm gonna lean in like it's the I gotta throw everything I got at it. Like, that's just who I am. And I try to create the conditions that allow me to deal with those peaks and valleys without getting sort of sucked in. But you own your energy, you own your balance. And if you take responsibility for that, I think you can have a much, much longer and healthier career.
Oh, I love that. And throw in a mojito and some really good chocolate, and then you're just good to go. Totally. Christopher, what a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for opening yourself up and opening the window into your world and how you have climbed from flipping burgers at McDonald's to president of DoorDash. I just love it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Much appreciated.
See, you guys, this is what we do. We bring you these stories every single week, and we work so hard to make sure you understand that it is difficult, and it's okay. You're supposed to be lonely or worried or scared or fired or fail. That is all part of the climb up the mountain. So thank you so much, as always, for tuning in. You know I just adore you guys, but you need to adore me back. 3 p.m. Eastern every single day, Monday through Friday. It's the Claim and Countdown, and we are beating the competition. I'm like all geeked up about that, so I have to, you know, spread that word too. But thanks again, and we'll see you next time.
The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day, featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.